This is Emotional Connection with Raphael Kushner. It's my personal and professional passion to help people access their emotions directly. This simple but rare process, for those who master it, creates greater wisdom, success, and most of all, well-being. Each week on this podcast, I share a recent session recorded with a client facing a particular challenge. This gives you, the listener, a chance to see the process of emotional connection in an up-close, unedited fashion, applied to practical, everyday concerns. Whenever you get the gist of the issue at hand and want to dive into the process itself, feel free to skip ahead in the podcast. For more information on this work, please visit my website, livingthequestions.org. This is also where you can reach me to ask questions and provide feedback, schedule your own private session by phone, get listings of upcoming events in your area, and learn about our unique year-long program. Once again, that's livingthequestions.org. Thank you so much for joining us. And now, enjoy the podcast. Hello and welcome back. We are here today with Mindy. Welcome, Mindy.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
Oh, you're welcome. This is part two with Mindy. We got into some really great stuff, and we just kind of began in our call last week, and that's why I invited Mindy to come back for a second session and see where we would travel together. Just a quick review in case you haven't remembered or you never heard part one of this conversation. I'm going to do a version that won't at all do justice to Mindy and her experience, but these are the main themes we were working with. Mindy grew up in a house with a mother who was struggling with addiction. She left that house as soon as she could, had a very interesting life. She's a counselor, and the main thing that we were bringing forward from this session is that with a second marriage, Mindy met a man who was a physician, and he was very helpful to her in working with her mother going through addiction treatment at a later point in life. And eventually her mother died from drug-related causes. And then, very surprisingly, Mindy experienced a great betrayal because her husband and the father of her two children, after all that work that he had done around addiction and in Mindy's life, turned out to become an addict himself. He began using on the day that their second child was born. When Mindy found out about this, it threw her life into great turmoil. And since then, they have been on a path of exploration and hopeful healing and recovery, but they haven't really been able to break through some of the main issues that they've been dealing with to see if they can get back together, if that is the right thing for them. And in our session last week, we looked at, I asked Mindy a really important question, which was in all of the different healing work and modalities that she has studied, been involved in, trained in, you know, had any of them really led to some healing around the deep issues that she had experienced earlier on in her life? And she gave a candid answer, and she said, not really. And we talked about what might create that kind of healing, and we got to the place where we began working with the tools of emotional connection to bring Mindy more in touch with herself and her own internal emotional flow, to meet herself in a very loving way, a way that she wasn't able to be met at many key points in her life. And just before we dive in together, I would add a couple other things. One of them is that we were looking at the anger that Mindy feels about the whole situation, which is certainly makes sense. It's justified. Most people would feel it. And we began to look at how Mindy could take that anger and own it and have her own experience of it, possibly for with a positive result, as opposed to having it continue to kind of spill out and re-stimulate so much of what has been difficult between she and her husband. We also talked about how it really would be necessary for she and her husband to resume counseling if they were going to make a serious go of having a new kind of relationship. And in particular, in relation to her husband, we talked about the fact that although he's on a healing journey, he hasn't really had some deeply intimate conversations and vulnerable conversations with Mindy about the source of his own wounding and what really at those deep levels would have led to such a drastic choice that he made when clearly he was in a situation where it was very difficult for him to be present. So in a moment I'm going to ask Mindy to share with us what's happened in the last week since we had our session. But before that, since I just went on a very, very long summary, I want to check in with you, Mindy. Is there anything that I didn't do justice to or that I left out that you want
to help? Well, I'm incredibly impressed with how you could summarize all of that. So, no, I think you hit the high points and the low points pretty well.
Okay, good. So, well then, yes, let's go to your own experience. And it has been a week since our last call. And the way we left it, you know, you were going to be experimenting and, you know, experiencing in the laboratory of your own life with some of these practices and principles. And I'm anxious to hear what happened for you.
Well, the first 3 days, I was really kind of in a very calm place, and every time I would feel the sort of instinct to get angry or just feel impatient or even irritable with my husband or even my kids for that matter, it would just dissipate. You know, I just kind of found myself sort of just remembering some of the things that we talked about and just the state of mind that I felt that I was in right after we spoke. Mm-hmm. So it was like 3 days of being really, I don't want to call it euphoric, but very peaceful and kind of self-contained.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm just going to pause for 1 second, because a word that I would use for what you're describing is expansive. So, you know, open.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. And that really is a hallmark of real self-connection. So.
Yeah, and it's interesting you would use that word, because I keep saying, and I've been saying this ever since this whole thing happened, since the thing happened with my husband, is that I felt contracted. I feel like everything feels contracted, constricted, you know, very blocked.
Right.
So very the opposite of expansive, whatever that is.
Right. And these are terms that, I mean, we haven't spent a lot of time together, any time together, prior to these calls.
No.
And you might not even know that the continuum between contraction and expansion is really a focal point of this work. And those are terms that we use consistently.
Uh-huh.
So it makes complete sense to me when you were just on your own, organically coming to that place where you realized you were contracted. And that's just a real key point. And I think we'll come back to that in a few minutes. So if you will, keep going.
Well, and I want to say something a little bit about the work I do with my, I'm a psychologist, and the work I work with people who have creative blocks, and so I've been very frustrated with my own process because, you know, when this whole constricted experience that I've had for the last few years is it stops that creative flow, and I'm so, you know, kind of painfully aware of it because of the work that I do, that, it feels very, I don't know if it's hypocritical, but certainly frustrating that I can't unblock me, and I spend literally, you know, 6 hours a day working on that with other people.
Okay, so let me just ask you something about that, because I don't have any judgment about that. I mean, I think from my own self, I really understand the adage, you know, we teach what we need to learn. And but before you go on, since you brought up that important point, if you were a client of you,
mm-hmm.
is there anything that you would be counseling you to be or do or explore that you haven't been bringing into your life?
Probably. Probably.
But the probably, that's an interesting and honest answer, because it may just be that the tools that you rely on, you know, in your practice and that are really helpful for the issues that you work with directly may not, you know, in the same direct way touch this kind of contraction, this kind of issue. And that would be fine, because that would just mean that it's different tools that we need
right.
to apply here.
Right, it's not like a cookie cutter experience, you know.
Right, because if you had said to me, you know, a lot of times I'll ask a client or even just, you know, a friend in my life, you know, they're talking about an issue that they're having trouble with, and I would just say, well, I see that you're doing a lot of judgment of yourself, and I have the sense that because you're a very compassionate person, that if a friend were in this situation, you wouldn't be responding with such, you know,
right.
a negative way. So what would you say to your friend, or what would you say to your client? And so had you answered, just if your first instinct had been, well, I would have talked to them about the six-point program, I would talk to myself about the six-point program or about the way that we deal with blocks, and I would have applied it to the situation, then I would have felt like, oh, that's just interesting, and let's explore that more. But I'm going to go with the idea, unless you tell me that, you know, you have a different intuition here, that since your response was probably, you know, which was really, as I heard it, like, yeah, there might be something different, but right away I'm not sure what that is. I'm going to go with the idea that this situation, as big and as just absolutely explosive as it has been in your life, you know, may just be requiring a different set of tools.
Yeah, I feel like it does. I feel like it does.
Okay.
You know, I keep wanting to, like, one of the things that goes through my head is, you know, what I would tell other people, what I feel like I should be doing myself is keeping the focus on me, you know, like not put it on my husband and his issues, but really put it on me and what I need to sort of get control of or experience. Because when I start thinking about all of his stuff, I get really derailed and lost.
Well, so that's a really important point, and that sounds like a piece of wisdom that is applicable from your work. And then I think the next part is the how, right? How should I focus on myself? And that's really where this work is coming in, and we're providing some new practices and looking at it in a slightly different way. But you're absolutely right about that. You know, speaking from my own personal experience, when my life was just completely blown apart, and there was another person who was central to that, I constantly had to learn and relearn and relearn how to take my attention off of her and bring it back to me, because as soon as we put our attention on that other person in that kind of gnawing, endless way, we just abandon ourselves in the process.
Exactly.
But what I didn't have at that time is, you know, what we're talking about here today, which is a kind of a direct, clear way of understanding how I'm supposed to do what everybody who was wise in my life was telling me to do. You know, you've got to stop thinking about her, or you've got to stop thinking about him, you've got to stop obsessing about what they're doing and not doing, and just really focus on yourself. But if we just leave it there and we don't know exactly what and how, you know, then we're not really going to be able to do it, and we're just going to kind of flounder around for a while or for a long time. So,
yeah.
So that's why, you know, I think we were on track in terms of beginning to look at that how. But I do, before you go on in sharing what happened during the week, I want to add one other thing, which is that you, I get that you've been frustrated for a long time because, you know, you work with people who have creative blocks and you haven't been able to, you know, break through your own blocks in this situation. But based on this conversation, where we've talked about the difference between this kind of experience and the usual blocks you work with, and the fact that there's a missing piece of the how, does that shift or settle in any way for you that relatively pervasive judgment, like I should be able to be handling this better, you know, just on the basis of my training and my work?
Yes.
Does it make
more
sense to you why you wouldn't?
Well, you know, the thing that really I was really tuned into after I hung up with you was that there's this feeling of feeling helpless that I've felt over the last few years. Like I hate this word, but I've been feeling very victimized, and I hate feeling so helpless. And what happened with our phone session was that I felt like I wasn't just, you know, telling you what was going on. I was feeling like we were sort of collaborating and trying to do something. And I felt like I think I was energized by that feeling of okay, I'm actually doing something, you know. That really fed something in me that I haven't felt in a long time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate you bringing up that that piece of it. And my response is that there's two kinds of action. There's action that has to do with, okay, I'm going to make this plan and I'm going to, you know, make this phone call, et cetera. And then there's the kind of doing, which is really a form of being. And, you know, you mentioned feeling helpless. And, you know, we spent some time, I believe, last week, and we may spend more time today, bringing you into direct connection with that feeling of helplessness or victimization. And it's paradoxical. It's almost even counterintuitive to think, like, to just pay really close attention to this feeling is a powerful action. But in my experience, it's the most powerful action because it actually changes the experience itself and it changes your relationship to yourself. So when you say, you know, I hate using this term victimization and I hate using, you know, this feeling of helplessness, from my perspective, that's a flashing neon arrow, you know. Go there. Let's go together. That's why, you know, that's why I'm talking about it now. If we're going to keep, you know, I'm going to keep getting more information from you about this, you know, last week. But if we were in process right now, I'd say, okay, Mindy, let's dive in. Let's go meet that helplessness again. Because that's actually the thing that you've been running away from at key points in your life. That's the piece that goes all the way back to, you know, living in the home that you lived in. So your creation of a new kind of relationship with those places in you that you admittedly don't like and don't want. That's the key to all of your healing and restoration in this situation. And it is empowering to know that you have some positive way to be with these overwhelming feelings, even if that being, as I said, isn't, you know, an action plan for what you're going to do, you know, today, tomorrow, and next week.
Right.
So I wanted to make a distinction between those two kinds of doing and to highlight the fact that that second kind of doing, which is really a practice of being present, is, you know, the heart of the work that we began and also what I think is the most powerful way forward for you.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So you felt that, and that's what contributed largely, as you were describing, to these first 3 days of an expansive peacefulness. And then,
mm-hmm. it all just felt like I couldn't get it back. Like the same old, you know, kind of reflexive behaviors. I feel reflexive. They're probably more controlled than I imagined, but they just came back, and I was just in that really crappy, contracted place again, just where I just was just shut down, angry, frustrated, irritable, all the worst parts of myself again. And when I did, you know, like I tried to do the exercises of closing my eyes and sort of feeling that wave, and I couldn't quite get back there. I could feel physical kind of tenseness, and I could feel my chest really tense, and I could even feel like my kind of almost like a racing heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
And when I tried to slow myself down and calm myself down, I was just like, you know, it's like trying to meditate and having too many things going on in your head. You know, there's just too much going on, and my head wouldn't let me, it wouldn't let me kind of go into kind of any kind of relaxed state.
So how long would you say that in those times that you're describing after the third day, how long would you give it before you felt like, oh, this isn't really working, and then you would just stop and go on to something else?
Probably like 20 minutes.
Okay. And about how many times between, you know, day 3 and day 7 did that happen?
I would say, I did it like 3 times a day.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So that's pretty great. I mean, first I want to, you know, really acknowledge you for continuing to practice even in the face of, you know, those kind of challenges. But I also want to go back to say, so we spoke for about an hour, and you had an introduction to these practices. We talked about it, and then you experienced it a little bit. And then after that, you got, you know, these 3 days that were kind of a wonderful respite from what you've been experiencing. So from my perspective, that's a pretty good ratio, right? You 1 hour... 1 hour equals 3 days.
Okay.
And so I don't want to gloss that over, and because we could easily say it worked for 3 days and then everything went back to its same old crappy way, and so I guess it didn't work.
Right.
Right. But I'm focused on how, wow, 3 days is great, especially after you've been suffering.
I really felt good. I mean, I felt like I had just had a vacation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It was really, really. It was one of the things that's happened in the last 2 years is I've kind of isolated myself from a lot of people,
mm-hmm.
Just because I really don't feel like I have a lot of positive things to say. And in those 3 days, I was really reaching out way more than I have in 2 years.
Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just a quality of expansiveness within yourself and peacefulness. That also led to just a natural inclination for you to reconnect.
Yeah, and that's pretty much my authentic self, you know, but I haven't really had access to it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. So I wanted to share with you just a couple points about how we deal in this work with the kind of resurgence of the contracted state that you came upon, you know, after day 3. I don't remember if we touched on these exactly last time. But the most important thing I want to tell you, first of all, is that we look at the situation as a no-fail zone. So what that means is if you attempt to connect with yourself and to practice emotional connection in this way and something overwhelming arises and you can't do it, then that's actually really good information and a really good opportunity, because now we can see where some of the biggest stumbling blocks are. We can investigate them in a lot of different ways, but especially experientially. And then the next time they arise, we have further awareness and skill to stay present with them rather than, you know, to get knocked off our center. So even though, you know, those 4 days, I'm sure were really frustrating and painful, and even though, you know, they probably were more so because they came in stark contrast to the vacation days that you had previously, from my perspective, what we just need to do is look more closely at what was happening during those sessions. And in our closer look, I'm completely confident that we're going to be able to find the pieces that we need to bring greater attention to, so that when those very things come up again, you'll have an increasingly better result.
Okay, great.
Yeah. So before we do just that, is there anything else that you want to share or ask about in relation to this last week that you were just describing?
Well, yeah. You know, there are things that, you know, that happen in the course of a week, you know, like even in the course of this week, that it's like re-triggering.
Mm-hmm.
If I had had an ideal week, you know, just in terms of life
mm-hmm.
events, it probably still would have been difficult to maintain where you and I left off, but I had like there were a couple of things that happened during the week that I felt were like triggers for the feelings that I have around my anger. And so, you know, I start to feel like there's this justification, and I create a huge argument for myself around how sort of my like righteous indignation kind of thing. And I get really caught up in that, like, you know, why I'm so justified in being so angry. And again, it's very other pointed in terms of, you know, where my husband is sort of failing me. And I mentioned this the last time, but it's this feeling of like just outrageous disappointment.
Right.
And that I'm out, and then I start to feel like, you know, this goes, I don't want to get too derailed here, but I think because there have been, I experienced a lot of things really young. I left home when I was 14, and I just feel like my adult life is supposed to not be in vain, and it's supposed to be lived really well. I mean, I think that's the message I gave to myself a long time ago, that, you know, whatever that early suffering was, that there's just going to be a really a wonderful life. And so when I'm stuck in this marital situation that just doesn't feel like it's working, I just get lost in a sort of a disappointment and a sadness and an anger that's all wrapped into somehow like I'm failing myself. I don't know if that makes sense.
Sure, this is all really helpful.
So then I kind of futurize, you know, I just think, oh my God, what have I created? Where is my life going? I have these two amazing children, but I can't quite make the passionate love piece of my life work, and all, you know, and then I just go into this sort of spiral of just, you know, sadness.
Yeah.
You know. So, and then, you know, so the stuff that happens in the course of a day or a week kind of triggers me, you know.
Right. So I'm gonna just say back some of those pieces because they're important, and they're actually part of what I wanted to explore with you anyway. So there were a couple triggering events. We'll talk about those in a moment. But what they did, if I heard you correctly, is they started up that kind of cycle of righteous indignation. And what I would say about that is that it would take you from a place where you were just experiencing your anger directly to one in which you were attaching to your anger and kind of going on the ride. And so the justification is I can be angry without having the same awareness that I've just begun practicing about the anger because it's what is supposed to be happening, you know, and I'm in support of it. And so that could take you out of the practice, you know, that we were working with. And then you also said that when those kinds of things happen, it creates, as you said, an outrageous disappointment, but that comes back to a something that you kind of promised yourself a long time ago, which was that coming from the difficult childhood that you had and really starting out on your own, you know, very early, that, you know, you were going to just get rid of anything in the way that was going to keep you from claiming an adult life that was in some ways the antidote to the childhood that you had.
Exactly.
And that when you really have to sit with where you are right now and the part of it that feels like a big mess that isn't moving, it seems as if that promise that you made to yourself has completely blown apart, and it can create, you know, not just frustration and anger, but also real sadness and even despair, like, this isn't what was supposed to be happening. This isn't the life I was supposed to be creating. I didn't do it, and it's not here, and it seems like it's so far from being here and almost futile in that sense.
Exactly. That's exactly it.
Okay. So, excuse me, before we go on, I just want to make one point. It's something that maybe it can just kick around in the back of your mind over the next days. It's not something we need to focus on right now, but we're here, so it's worth highlighting. When we are young and we make any kind of promise or set any kind of goal that is in opposition to the childhood that we've experienced or the environment that we've come from, there's a way that that choice is reactive and still very much connected to the earlier experience that we want so much to escape from. So in other words, the goal of having that wonderful adult life comes specifically from needing to escape what came before it. And from the perspective of this work, we can't escape anything. So what we want to do instead is actually go reclaim everything that we had to, for our own survival back then, create just a huge distance from. And it's in that reclamation that we actually find the healing that leads to that wonderful life that it is that we promise for ourselves. But as long as we are trying with all of our might to get away from what was so bad, we're only going to keep recreating it in one form or another, because what's being called for at the deepest level is this kind of reconnection. In other words, all those horrible life events that seem to doom us to the experience that we had early on are really just projections that are saying, just come back and feel and reclaim what was broken, and then all of this will not have to keep happening. Now, that's a vast oversimplification, but essentially, that's what's happening. So the experience that you have right now is this golden opportunity to stop that cycle once and for all. And the 3 days that you had that showed you something different and possible came from, I feel completely clear and confident in from what we've been talking about and the work we did last week, it came from you beginning to meet yourself that way, beginning to accept yourself fully, and especially those parts that are the most difficult to accept.
Right.
And it's not a surprise that after 3 days, you got thrown off the horse, so to speak, because this is a lifelong habit for most of us, not just for you. But in your case, the habit is fueled by so much justification to stay within it. Mm-hmm. So what we're going to do is just, not only continue to explore and gain information from what happened, as I mentioned earlier, but we're also going to just keep working the muscle so that it becomes easier and easier for you to keep practicing, and then therefore you get longer periods of that expansive state, and when something trips you up, you see it quicker, you feel it more quickly, so you get to the heart of the matter, so the contraction lasts much less time, and there you are, back in that more peaceful state. And instead of it having to be something where, like, whoop, I lost it and it's not coming back, those triggers or those challenges create, whether it's a day or even sometimes just an hour or a few minutes, they create a dip, but they don't become like a life sentence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah. So let's go back, and if you can, tell me, and you can just do it at whatever detail feels comfortable. I'm not asking for, too much revelation. But what can you share about those two key instances that really triggered that righteous indignation you described?
Well, I can share. I can be specific. I got a phone call from a detective who was looking for my husband. So as soon as I got that message, that just sent me spiraling, like, what the heck is this?
Right.
And as it turned out, this detective had arrested 3 people who had stolen my husband's credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
So in and of itself, if you look, I mean, I've thought about this so much, it wasn't anybody's fault. And they actually arrested these people, but I was furious as soon as I got it, I went right back in my head to he doesn't know how to keep our family safe. He gets his credit card stolen. And then I just sort of futurized from there. And I went right into, you know, I can even feel it right now as I'm talking, like right in my chest, like this anger of, you know, he's a mess. That's all I could feel in my head is he's a mess. And how did he get his credit card stolen? And why didn't he know his credit cards were stolen? And how do you have 3 credit cards and not know they're stolen? And I just went into this whole indignant place around, you know, that. So when I spoke to him on the phone to say that this detective had called, he said, you know, you sound like you're really mad at me, Mindy. And I said, I am. He said, well, I didn't do anything. I got my wallet stolen, you know, or my credit card. It's not his wallet, his credit cards. And so, you know, that the way he perceives it is he's being victimized by me,
mm-hmm.
you know, and in many ways I guess he is because he's not upset at all. And I just see, all I can feel is this is the wrong person in my life. This is the person who can't keep me safe. This is a person who crazy things happen to all the time, mm-hmm. who, you know, and I just go into that whole, then I can relive, you know, in that moment I could immediately relive the moment I saw him overdosed in our house, in the, you know, 4 a.m. and the ambulances and all of that. Like that whole thing just, it's like reopens up that whole thing. And I just think all I want to do is flee. Like I feel mm-hmm. trapped. I want to flee. And mm-hmm. so it just triggers all of that.
Right.
And he can't, you know, from his perspective, it's like, I guess, you know, the poor guy can't get away from the memory of what he's created in our lives because I won't let him forget it.
Right, right. So, okay, so that was number one. And before we go to number two, I just want to talk about some things that arise from that. Most of our work is about your own connection to you and to these feelings and a way to be able to be with and to even soothe these really powerful and challenging feelings through your compassionate awareness. However, this is a situation that you are in that is constantly re-stimulating. Whether or not you have a dramatic thing like a phone call from a detective, and when you were talking about the futurizing that you were doing, you were using that word. You know, I was appreciative of how you were using the word because you recognized that you were spinning off into stories, but. You know, there's a powerful question here, and, you know, I wrote you an email in response to an email from you earlier this week, and I was reiterating that I don't know that there's one right path here, and I wanted you to be open in your own exploration. And so what we were talking about is, you know, does it make sense for you to stay in this marriage, you know, the way that it is now? And so in that vein, I want to ask you just a really straightforward question, which is, and you can pause to answer this, you can feel it in your body, you can see how clear of an answer you have or perhaps how murky it is, but the question is this, is there anything that your husband could do or anything that could happen that would cause you to feel really deeply that he was transformed into a person who could provide the kind of safety and security and consistency that you need in a primary relationship?
It's a hard one. My gut tells me no,
mm-hmm.
that we're just so different in that way. And my gut says no, and I'm not sure if I can trust that, you know, because I think there are certain things that he does do that are, you know, that are good. You know, he's certainly not all bad, and he's not all completely chaotic. But I'm not, my reaction is that I'm not sure it's possible for me to restore faith in mm-hmm. in him. And so I feel like he's taken us and himself down a path that is so far from where I ever wanted to be mm-hmm. that I don't know if he could ever do enough. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And,
right.
And
so
that's a
good, strong answer that, you know, allowed in its expression for you to have a number of different experiences. You have a gut no. You're not sure that you can trust the no as a result of all of what it brings up in you. And you notice that maybe the question is more about what you could come to in a certain sense than what he could do. So that's exactly what I was thinking, you know, even right before you said it. And so I want to rephrase the question a little bit to say, and again, this is just a snapshot. This is right now. Things could change.
Right.
But in this moment, can you imagine reaching a place where you trusted him? And what I mean by trust in this case is that you weren't looking over your shoulder or over his shoulder wondering when, you know, this new positive change that, you know, hopefully would be instituted. I mean, I'm even going to the place where things are better and, you know, you guys are seeming to work it out. Could you imagine getting to a place where you weren't always just, you know, waiting for the other shoe to drop and therefore being on edge and suspicious?
I would so love to feel that, but the state that I'm in, it's hard to imagine that, you know, but I would love to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's where I go, well, is it him? Is it me? You know, is this just my stuff that I bring to the table? And you know, am I shoving all of my history on this experience and not being fair? You know,
well,
I'm not.
But let's just be really clear about this, Mindy, that there's a lot going on here, and there's your journey, and what you need to do for your own sense of constancy and well-being and healing that is necessary for you, you know, for your highest good, regardless of what happens with your marriage. You know, you're going to do that work in the marriage or apart from the marriage.
Right. Right.
That's your piece, right? Because
right.
I'm hopeful that, you know, based on what we were just talking about a few minutes ago, that you've reached this place where you don't want to run, you want to embrace, you know,
right.
internally.
Right.
You want to shift, you know, your internal experience to the point where your external experience also has to shift, and suddenly you're surrounded by things that are much more peaceful that
right.
Don't mirror what you ran away from.
Exactly.
So I'm just going to put it out there that, you know, even the very fact that you, you know, contacted me and that we're having these conversations, that there's a commitment in you to walk that path. And what I'm wanting to make really clear here is that that's going to happen one way or the other.
Right.
It's not dependent on you staying in your marriage, and it's not dependent on you leaving your marriage.
No, and that's very freeing for me, too, just mm-hmm. to think about it in those terms, because I just want to get out of my own way. You know?
Right, right. And so just to finish that thought, regarding your husband and your marriage, there are this question of, you know, could you ever trust him? And your answer is, I would love to be able to, but I just can't see that in this state. Yes, there's inner work that you can do that could help you in that regard. But so much of that does have to do with him and how he shows up with you. And, you know, part of it is just, you know, the path that he's walking now and what he's doing. So I want to ask you about that, and then I want to go to, you know, what we talked about last week in relation to the actual work he's doing and how he's sharing that with you. But in terms of the now, Mm-hmm. Let's just say that you only were looking, you know, like let's say over the last couple months and as you see forward into the next 2 months. Is there anything about how he's living his life on the practical level, you know, what he's doing day to day, how he's approaching it, you know, all that stuff around, you know, money, bills, responsibility, job, et cetera. Is there anything that he is doing that in and of itself arouses that, you know, feeling of caution, suspicion, mistrust, or would you say if you're just looking at that, that he's on top of his game?
No, there are specific things that definitely keep me on guard, like hypervigilant.
Okay, so tell me, so just list the top ones that come to mind.
Top ones. Well, he is a poker player. And I'm never quite sure when he's playing poker and when he's, you know, and what he, just let me back up quickly.
Sure.
When he, I think I mentioned he was a director of a hospital. Mm-hmm. He lost that job. And so he's working as a physician in a small hospital now, but he's only allowed to work a certain few days a week because of the drug situation.
Mm-hmm.
So he has a lot of free time, and that creates some sort of anxiety in me because I'm never quite sure where he is, and then if he's playing poker, I just feel like that feels out of control to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it just feels like it's, you know, just forget about the money part. It feels like it's like a game of deception, and then I think, oh my God, you know, maybe this person is all he's about is deception. So that spirals me.
Mm-hmm.
And our, you know, we've been, you know, we're borrowing from here to there to take care of finances, and when I find out that certain things haven't been paid and other things have been, you know, we don't have an open experience with how we deal with money. So my money's very separate, his money's very separate. So all of that, you know, that's just not been, it's just not been cleaned up at all.
Mm-hmm.
And because, you know, whereas before, even though he, unbeknownst to me, was using drugs, he was working
mm-hmm.
a lot. And so there was a certain amount of, strangely, there's a certain calm I had, certainly in our financial situation, and then in, you know, just where you kind of know the other person's rhythms in the day. So now I have no sense of his daily rhythms at all.
Okay, so let's pause there because that's a lot of important stuff that you just mentioned. So does he have any indication about what his poker playing sets off in you?
Yes.
Okay, so what's been his response to that?
When he first got out of Betty Ford, he was doing everything he could to kind of get me back in the fold.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, I won't play any poker at all, because he used to do it for fun and it used to bother me.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, I won't do that. And I was very appreciative of that. And then he started playing again. And he said, well, you know, this is what we need to do because, you know, I win most of the time. So this really helps our finances. And he said, so, you know, that's just what I have to do. And so he knows how I feel about it. He knows that it just really, really, really bothers me. But he's justifying it. And so that justification process bothers me because I felt like that's probably what he had to do to use. So, you know, that all of that stuff feels very intertwined.
Mm-hmm. And so you just kind of left it at that.
Yeah, there's a futility I have to the whole situation. Like, you know, there's like, okay, well, even if he stopped playing poker, would that really make a big difference? At this point, there's so many other issues between us that's one but
yeah,
of
but,
many.
So, but, you know, when I asked you to talk about the now, you know, we haven't even gotten into the before, but when I asked you to talk about the now, and the first thing you brought up, or the two things you brought up were the poker and the, you know, excessive freedom and scheduling. And So what I want to do is just reflect back to you something, or maybe actually, maybe a better way to say it is to shine a light on something. Poker is gambling.
Right.
And gambling is a highly addictive activity.
Right.
And your husband already has demonstrated that he has a very addictive personality, and he pretty much destroyed or came close to destroying everything he cared about through his addiction.
Right.
So his and so he's telling you that he actually needs to play poker to make money. And what he's really saying to you is that the best way I can provide for my family in this difficult situation is to enter into an incredibly high-risk activity. That's high-risk for anybody, but for me is also especially high-risk because of my addictive personality.
Right.
And
right.
So what I just have to so every once in a while I have to sort of, you know, hit the pause button. And question everything. So in hitting the pause button right now, I'm remembering that last week you told me that, you know, he has been in groups, that he's in – didn't you say that he's in a 12-step program?
He's in a 12-step. He sees a psychiatrist once a week, and he goes to his doctor's group.
And so he has a sponsor as well.
And he has a sponsor.
Right. Okay. So my question for you when I'm hitting the pause button, and now I'm, you know, I'm stepping out of my – my usual role as just the compassionate fellow traveler with you, because I feel like the situation warrants it. You know, I have to have a certain level of intensity to my question, but, you know, what the hell are these people doing? What is his sponsor saying to him about the fact that he's trying to make a living through gambling?
You know, this has been, and see, you know, I appreciate you saying this. This is where I feel like I have been sort of alone, like I've been really alone in all of this. I felt like part of my righteous indignation has been about this, where I sat with his psychiatrist and said, how can you justify his gambling while he's working on all these other addictive things? And his psychiatrist is not very proactive around this. He's like, you know, he's just a little wishy-washy about it. Like, you know, well, Henry really understands those. Oh, no, I'm just giving you his name. But so it becomes, I just feel very alone in it, you know, that it, with each of the people who he seems to, you know, entrust all of his problems with, no one is saying anything about the disease or whatever you want to call it, the addiction of gambling. Mm-hmm. And it makes me crazy. It makes me
and
feel.
And what about
like,
his sponsor? Did you ever ask him what his sponsor says about it?
No, I've never actually talked about it with his sponsor, and I don't know what his sponsor thinks.
It's a classic situation in a 12-step where you just trade one addiction for another.
Right.
You stop drinking and then you start smoking. And did we actually get to the root of what needed to be healed, or did we just trade behaviors?
Right.
And
right.
So well, I'm glad that we're talking about this, and I want to go, you know, to the next step in talking about this with you, and that is to say that obviously there's a long way for everybody to go if, you know, a really deeper healing could happen. But even in this moment, if you were going to have the kind of relationship that you deserve and that your children deserve you to have, then your husband would need to be in a situation where he was saying to you, I know I have created a tremendous amount of instability. And while I know that each of us are responsible in some way for our own sense of well-being and safety, we're also responsible to one another for that. And I want to do everything I can to help you feel as safe as possible given everything that has happened between us. And so I'm going to look at my behaviors not just in terms of what I want to do or what I need to do, but I'm going to look at them through the lens of, are they helping you, Mindy, in your process of coming to feel some kind of beginning trust and confidence and safety after everything that's happened? So what I'm saying is that the ability to step outside of one's own inclinations and then to see it through your eyes and to actually be willing to make some adjustments, like he was in the beginning after Betty Ford, but isn't now, you know, that's key. That's key. Even if his psychiatrist thought it was okay and he thought it was okay, you don't think it's okay.
Right.
So that's important. That would be an important element for him to look at. And so even if he disagreed with you, it would make sense that he would do his best to try to help you with your feelings of safety and make choices that weren't even necessarily, at least for a temporary period of time, what he would do on his own in order to help you.
That's ideally what I would like, but it doesn't seem...
It sounds like that's very far from happening.
Yeah.
And let me go back to the other piece, too, because this is important. So if he knows that, you know, you feel very unstable in the relationship and that you feel very distrustful because of what's happened and always... And that you have to be hypervigilant, to use that important term that you used before. And if he knows that he has all these vast stretches of free time in his life, a loving thing to do, a responsible thing to do, would be to come to you and say, Mindy, what would be a good way that we could be in touch about where I am during the day that would make you feel good? Would you like me to check in with you at certain intervals? Would you like me to give you a schedule for my day and then call you if that changes for some reason? You know, what would make you feel that all of this time that I have that I didn't used to have is okay and not threatening to you?
Right.
You know, have you had that conversation?
Yeah, in many different ways. And it, in the moment, he says, you know, he gets a little defensive and then he says, I can do that. And then it doesn't happen. And then, you know, then I'm back to being angry. One of the things that we had
And then it
on,
doesn't happen. Let's pause there. I know there's more, but it doesn't happen. It maybe starts out, you know, a little bit, and then it just reverts. So,
no, because he's afraid of my judgment.
And then when it reverts, though, what happens then? You know, it just, does it get spoken about? Does he acknowledge it? Do you acknowledge it? How does that go?
No, we just go back to sort of the way we were relating before, which is very sort of on, you know, on a distant kind of a level. Nobody talks about anything. Then I go back to being annoyed and distant, and he goes back to kind of wanting to know why I'm annoyed and distant after weeks of it, you know. And then so we keep repeating the cycle.
So the reason that I was wanting to, you know, pause and highlight some of these issues is, as we said before, you know, you have your work to do, he has his work to do, and then you have the work that the two of you would need to do together.
Right.
But when it comes to something that could really, you know, turn the tide between the two of you and in your family, ultimately, you know, no matter what anybody else would tell you, you know, he needs to be the prime mover. You know, you're not the one who, you know, blew everything up. And it's true that we all contribute on all sides. I'm not blaming when I say that. I'm just factually describing the situation. Right. And what I want to reflect to you from what you've been sharing with me is that he seems to have a positive intention.
He does.
And also seems to be very far away from being able to enact that positive intention with any kind of specificity and consistency that could really turn that tide.
Yeah.
So unless or until that changed, all the healing work that you're going to do on yourself that's going to be really positive for you for the rest of your life will not be able to change the core dynamic between the two of you.
Right.
That's just a given.
Right.
So
if I could change, I feel like if I could change me and just be like in integrity with myself, you know, where I am, where I don't become angry and triggered and frustrated all the time, that at least then I have that part of me to sort of make strong decisions from, whether it's to stay or leave, but at least I'll have this sense of well-being, which I don't have.
Right, right. And so that's perfectly stated. And, you know, I'm often talking about people making important life choices and how essential it is for them to notice whether they're making the choices out of resistance or acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
And making a choice out of resistance means I'm going to go this direction because I don't want to feel what's over there in that direction. And
right.
It's okay to make that choice, but it just means that you're going to revisit what you're resisting down the road in one form or another. Whereas when you make a choice from acceptance, you're saying, I'll feel this over here, I'll feel that over there. And in that state of openness, expansion, like we talked about before, I notice that I'm naturally drawn in one direction or another. And that's a choice that ends up being peaceful because
right.
we're not at war within ourselves when we make it. So
right.
I get that you're on that journey, and I support you in that journey 100%. And I also support you in looking at things that are outside of you just as clearly as we both want you to see things and be with things that are inside of you. And why I'm pausing and, you know, taking the spotlight off of you and putting it on the relationship and on your husband temporarily here is because I just want to reflect to you that the way that he is responding within the relationship, apart from you and what you do to contribute that and all of that kind of stuff, I'm just saying specifically him, is far from what you would need, even if you were, you know, vastly transformed within yourself.
Yeah, it's true.
So,
but,
go on, what were you going to say?
Well, in the beginning phases of our talking about getting back together a year ago, I wrote out a list of things that I needed from him in order for us to be together, just what I needed. And there isn't one thing that is on that list that even gets attuned to or attended to. Nothing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm sure he needs plenty from me, too, that doesn't get attended to either. But I had, you know, really clear moments of saying, this is really what I need.
Mm-hmm.
But it just, you know, I think there's just this futility going on that keeps
let me just take what you said and run with it a little bit with you. What would be the reason to stay?
Well,
a reason to stay.
Just a reason? Just one?
What seems like a big one to you?
Well, it seems like the main one is, you know, I want to provide something stable and for my kids, and I don't want my kids part-time at all. I don't want to have created that in my life. So I don't want them having two homes. I don't want, you know, it's really focused around the kids. You know, until I could, you know, feel like there's something, some real growth between my husband and I, it's more the reason, the current reason that I try to keep it together, that I can justify it staying together, because everything feels between us doesn't feel good, but I don't want to split up our home because of my kids.
Okay. So it sounds like, you know, you and you've mentioned this word before in both conversations, that there's that causes you to feel trapped because it doesn't seem particularly positive. The signs aren't so good in terms of where things are now with the home together. And then you look at the possible situation of having two homes, and that doesn't seem much better, or maybe in some ways could seem worse. So, it feels like you're stuck.
Yeah, I feel very stuck.
Yeah.
And, I'm angry at myself in so many ways because when we were separated for a year, I guess I wish I would have just kept it that way, and just felt that would have, it was a lot clearer back then. And now it's very, I feel like now he's not going anywhere unless I tell him it's over. And then I feel like I have that baggage to deal with my children too. They don't know anything. They're too young to know what happened. And it's really not, I don't want to burden them with any of this. So I wind up feeling like I'm the one who created this situation for them, which
right.
is kind of twisted.
Right, right. I really hear that. It's another kind of a trap, right?
Like, yeah.
Suddenly I'm cast in the role of the family destroyer.
Right.
I'm actually doing something to try to create a reality that's healthy or healthy as possible for everybody.
Right, and I don't know how to get out of the feeling of being in this trap. And what I do is wind up feeling just angry,
Yeah.
That's it. And it's as if the anger tricks me into believing like I'm doing something.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I know it's self-sabotage.
Yeah.
But
now,
all that intellectual knowing doesn't do anything
right.
for me.
Right. We spoke in our last conversation about you talking to your husband about resuming counseling. Did you have that?
Yeah. No. I wanted to kind of resume where with this with you today, and then I thought I would sort of bring that up.
Mm-hmm. So because when I was trying to just, shine a relatively bright, if hopefully not too harsh of a light on the situation, I think it's clear to say, and it's really hard to imagine anybody not agreeing with this from what you've told me, that this isn't working.
Yeah, it's not working.
Right. It's not working for him because he's not really liking how it is to relate to you. It's not working for you because you don't feel any renewed sense of trust or connection with him.
Right.
And it's been, did you say it was about 4 months or so since you last were in counseling, or was it longer than that?
It's since we stopped seeing a couple's therapist. It's been about 4 or 5 months,
yeah. Okay. So this isn't working. You have a team that's, speaking about him, you have a team that is helping you in your process, at least as, to some degree, because you must think that they're still in place for you. I'm not seeing that creating the kind of experience between us or helping create the kind of experience between us that's improving things. I haven't until recently, begun doing something really, different and proactive for myself regarding my own issues around all of this, my own emotional stuff that also goes back to my own, life that predates any of this with you. But I am doing that now, and I'm seeing that, this isn't working. So, and I'm also seeing that it's not helpful for me to confront you about that or for you to confront me about that in a place that's just going to cause us to be defensive and guarded and distant, because that's just going to perpetuate everything that's going on. So we have to be able to talk about how it's not working and why it's not working in a way that is as neutral and open as we can. If we can do that between ourselves, well, we could try and see, but likely not so much the case, because we haven't had a good track record over these last months in doing that. So the next thing that we really would, need to do is find someone, if not the previous person or people that you worked with, to help us create that environment. But if we're not talking about what's not working, why it's not working, and how it could be different, then we might as well just give up.
Right. Right.
And, it's so important that you, what you just said a few moments ago, I wrote down these needs earlier on and none of them are being met. Well, that's something that, you know, he really needs to hear in as safe a possible space to hear it. Just matter of fact, not,
yeah,
and it's your fault and you're wrong, or
right,
or
right,
you need to justify to me why they're not being met and it's only your responsibility that they're met. None of that. Just here's the basic fact. I searched my heart and I wrote down what I needed, and I look at that honestly through the eyes of the present day and I see that none of it is in place.
Right.
So that's me. That's where I'm at. How about you? What about what you need? And how's that looking? You know,
I can tell you exactly what he said. He had, because we've been down this road,
mm-hmm.
and you know, there are times where I am just so I'm calm about it,
mm-hmm.
and he'll, you know, he'll just say, you know, just love me, just let yourself love me. That's all you need to do, Mindy. Just let yourself love me. And it feels like it's devoid of all the reality between us.
Yeah, I'm pausing. Because I think, so that's a response to the question of what do you need from me? That's what he's saying?
Yeah, it's more like Alice said, you know, it's just not working.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's just look at the reality of our lives. It's not working. Mm-hmm. Let's not be angry about it. Let's not, you know, drag the kids through anything difficult. Let's just recognize it's not working and try to kind of figure out where to move from here, like how to, whether we separate, whether we, you know, do something in a way that's just, that's peaceful, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's his response is usually to just grab me and say, just love me. Just let yourself love me. And mm-hmm. it makes me feel very sad for him.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't make anything different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
I'm pausing because there's a lot in that. But mostly, you know, I just keep thinking of the Tina Turner song.
Which one?
You know, What's Love Got to Do with It?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, And I, you know, it's true on another level, all we need is love, but love takes many forms, and whether or not you love your husband is really a different question from whether the two of you can each and together do what needs to happen to create a healthy marriage, and whether that path is the best road for everyone concerned, especially your children. I mean, that's a really, really different question.
Right, right. No, so, that's exactly how I feel when he says that to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so when I hear that, it feels diversionary.
Mm-hmm.
Because it has within it somehow the idea that your love could make things okay. And that
yeah.
your love could somehow heal or transform him.
And that's right, and that's when I start to feel like that I am deficient or I'm flawed. Or
right.
I'm not enough, like I'm not, like I keep coming back to this place, which is if I could only, and then I could just like fill in the blank, all these things, if I were only more forgiving, if I were only more compassionate, if I were only more loving, if I were only more trusting, that kind of a woman would be better in this situation. You know, if I hadn't had a mother who was a drug addict, if I, you know, I'm bringing too much of my past into this. Why aren't I more accepting? You know, why isn't love enough? Why can't I be more loving? You know, and then I go to me of like, what the hell is wrong with me that mm-hmm. I can't just, you know, and like what he says, just let him love me. You know, it's just, it just feels all so sad.
So let me, you know, I, in this moment I notice inside of myself I'm kind of torn because on the one hand, since I'm such a devotee of this process of connection and I know that there's a lot that's up for you around this issue, you know, my first inclination is, okay, let's go there. Where are those places where you don't feel enough, et cetera? And I think that's important and I think we need to do that. But the other part of me that comes up that's going to win in this moment is the one that wants to, again, pause and talk about love and talk about how love could get expressed and what love might look like if not connected to some of these wounds and shoulds and places of not enoughness. Because what I want to point you to is a just one possible kind of love. Okay, that's not about just a kind of rolling over and accepting or trusting what doesn't feel right. So one kind of very powerful love is for you in your situation to, you know, look your husband in the eye and, you know, if necessary, you know, grab him by the shoulders and say, you know, I love you and I love our children and I love myself too much to spend one more day in which I'm pretending that it's okay that you're trying to make a living by gambling. So my love is strong here. I'm rising up like, you know, a mother lion, and even somebody who sees what's best in you, what's purest in you, and I'm telling you that needs to stop. And until that stops, none of this is working.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, if you can't promise me that it's going to stop right now and get support for it to stop and be surrounded by a team of people who are going to be working on making that stop, then you need to leave. So I'm not telling you to do that.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that that's the right path. I'm saying that's great love.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's one form of great love. And the reason I'm pausing to tell you that is because it's so easy to go into that, like if I just had a pure heart or if I just had a more compassionate space for him, if I could just create more ease so that he didn't feel so much under the gun and so much not enough and all of that, then, you know, maybe, just maybe, because this, maybe if I were different, if there was something in me that's missing in me, if my fatal flaw weren't there, then somehow this would all be different. And I just wanted to offer you a picture that has nothing to do with that, that is a picture of a kind of love that could show up in somebody who was completely different from you that doesn't at all look like what he's talking about.
Right.
It doesn't
right.
have anything to do with whether you're flawed in the way that you're believing you are or not. I like that sort of
reframing, as it were. But, and I, you know, I feel like I'm just this yes but person, which I hate. But
no, that's okay. I always encourage the yeah buts.
Okay, well, that's very good, because the yeah but is, as close as I've come to doing that, maybe with not that the sort of the intention that you put on, you know, sort of this is love, but when I get to that place where I say, you know, look, this just, I just can't take this anymore, and let's just separate and raise these children the best way we can in separate homes, his response to me has been, I'm not leaving. So if you really want this, Mindy, you have to file, you have to move, you have to, and so that's where the trap starts to feel ridiculous, because he just refused. He says, you know, he's not walking away. He's not leaving his home. He's not doing any of that again. So
But here's the thing about that, Minnie. First of all, I heard you said you made the distinction between the intention as I described it and, you know, what you were going to tell me. But what you were going to tell me is not that you were, I mean, what you described was not, you know, out of love,
right,
challenging him to step up.
Right, that's
true.
You were saying,
you know, like, this isn't working as it is, and so let's do something else that might work better. So those
right.
are really two very different approaches. So
right.
that's the first thing I want to say in response to the yeah, but. The second thing I want to say is, you know, and I got, as you were talking, I got chills because it so strongly came into clarity as you were describing, that he is telling you something that is putting your entire life challenge, your entire healing opportunity in absolutely stark terms in front of you. And what I mean by that is this. That is the exact situation that you were in as you grew up and that you had to run away from when you were 14. He's telling you, Mindy, you're trapped living in a house with an addict.
Right.
who is using. Right? He's not using whatever drugs he injected previously, but at least he's using through gambling.
Right.
And he's telling you, he's literally daring you. He's saying, you know, if you're going to change this reality, or if this reality is going to change, you're going to have to do it.
Right.
And until you do it, you're going to have to live in this essentially replicated version of the hell that you tried so hard to escape.
And I did escape, and I did a really wonderful job at living my life without that chaos. Mm-hmm. At a really, you know, really young age. So now I just say, yeah, you're exactly right. It's an absurd replication.
Well, you escaped everything you could, but what you couldn't escape was what was within you. All of those places that were unhealed,
right.
So wounded by being in that situation. And just to make a small personal digression. You know, I remember when I was about 19 years old and I was such a loving, compassionate, peaceful, progressive guy, and people would, you know about my own life story and the background I came from, and they would say, how did you, you know, escape your family? How did you not become all these other kinds of things that you could have become, and how did you get to be who you are given that environment? And I had lovely stories about that, what I did, how I adapted, you know, consciously and unconsciously to be able to escape. And I was telling myself the truth the best way I knew it, but it was completely false. And what I had to discover in my own life was that in the middle of a lot of beauty that I created and success, there were these places that had not been reclaimed in me, that were not getting a chance to participate in all of that, that I was not able to notice, to address, and to reclaim in the way that we're talking about. And for me, you know, the way that showed up was continually I would have relationships with people who I really was not meant to be with. It was pretty clear. But the one hallmark feature was that they would never love me the way that I could love them. Mm. So I invested incredible amounts of time and energy in trying to get people to love me.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept vowing I would never do that again. And then I would do it over and over again, and it would show up in all of these crazy ways. And I, you know, finally reached the place where I said, you know, wait a minute, this is bigger than me. I don't have any control over this. So, you know, whatever escape I made hasn't given me the tools to make this look different.
Right.
And so that's when I, you know, began at a deeper level on my own, you know, healing path. And so that healing path didn't negate all of the great gains that I made and all of the wonderful triumphs over adversity that I had, just like none of that is negated now in your life by what you're experiencing. That life that you created for yourself, you know, is absolutely real. And those gains are impressive, and lots of other people, you know, would have just completely folded under, you know, the pain and the challenge of that. I'm certain of it. But what's happening now and why this chaos is here, you know, and what you can do about it, you know, it all has to do with those pieces surfacing to be met and to be integrated into the wholeness of who you are. And so that's when I said that I got the chills, and when I heard you telling me what your husband says to you about this issue, I just saw that yes, it is full circle, and the pieces that you escape from that are so calling to you now for reintegration are this is the perfect setup for all of them to show up in the fullest form for you to meet, to be able to meet them if you're willing, and it's pretty clear that this situation is going to stimulate every single one of them, regardless of whatever choices you make. You are back in a situation that is guaranteed to create the very best possible healing opportunity if you're willing to look at it like that. And, also if you don't want to look at it like that, the same hell.
Right. No, I mean, first of all, I want to, I really appreciate you sharing your personal experience. And I do, I don't want to recreate the same hell, And the way my MO has always been to run, to find a new reality, to create a new reality, for myself, a new kind of just another way of being. And I just can't quite, this one has got me completely stymied. So yeah. I don't want to keep reenacting, I want to recreate. I haven't quite been able to have the tools to do that or even know how to do that.
Right. And so earlier what you were saying was that, you wanted to be able to make your choices from a more grounded, present, expansive place. And what we're talking about right now is just, bringing us back to that point. And it's the question of how you do that. And so there is this journey within, but at the same time, well, let me just back up. I asked you originally, what threw you off the horse after day three, and you told me that you got the call from the detective, and we didn't even get to whatever the other triggering episode was, but it's probably not relevant today, or not necessary, I should say, today.
Mm-hmm.
But the key to that situation was that it brought up for you a number of ways in which you felt as if you were in fresh danger.
Right.
Your fight or flight mechanism was getting a call from a detective and hearing suddenly that regardless of whatever healing work you're going to do on your own, suddenly you needed to be vigilant about what was outside of you.
Right, exactly.
Right. And actually, there's lots of reasons for that. And you are, and this is maybe how I'd like to kind of tie the inside to the outside with you. excuse me, you're not in a hypervigilant state because you're in post-traumatic stress. You're in a hypervigilant state because you're in traumatic distress. There's nothing post about it.
I wish it was post.
So the point is that your system, your being, is not going to allow you to settle into, calmly and peacefully, those vulnerable places that are calling for reconnection that you and I are talking about and that you're so committed to experiencing. It's not going to let you, if it feels like doing that is just going to, create a life-threatening situation for you and for your kids.
Right.
So you can't do that personal healing work unless there's at least a significant enough calm in the storm so that you can look around and you say, well, yes, there are these things that are troubling to me or that aren't completely clear to me, but I feel for this moment, there's nothing that needs my attention, So you have to create at least that modicum of safety to be able to do this kind of work.
Yeah.
And so our question now is, what is that modicum of safety for you? I mean, you can't control whether you're going to get a call from a detective, but
no.
That's a different issue. The real issue is, and here's kind of a piece of homework for you that is not emotional connection. I mean, we never know when we start these sessions where they're going to go.
Right.
And my dedication is to be present to what's arising, not to just, you know, give you a technique because that's the program.
Uh-huh.
Right? And to me, what's arising out of this phone call is a clarity that if you know your baseline needs for safety, and I'm not talking about the kind of safety that you would have to feel to recommit to this relationship 100%,
mm-hmm.
but I'm talking about your baseline needs for safety, let's say over the next 90 days,
mm-hmm.
so that you could commit within those 90 days to A, doing your own personal healing work, B, resuming counseling with your husband to deal with what can only be dealt with between the two of you. Then, you know, if you know what those are and you put them out there and you see whether they're met, that can give you a very clear and neutral space from which to make your decisions about what happens next.
That's fair enough.
So, here's just a question coming out of that. Do you feel like, you know, if you sat down and wrote them out right now, that you're really clear about what they are, or does that need a little bit of time and space?
I feel pretty clear about that.
So just speak them to me. What you know, if you did a rough draft and you just did it verbally, what are those baseline needs?
I think the poker thing is right up there, you know. I need him to stop playing poker and to clarify sort of in a really very specific way what our his finances are, so I can have a real, you know, I have an awareness of what's actual rather than what I don't understand or what's sort of just vague.
Mm-hmm.
So just to clarify all of our finances and to stop gambling. I would actually like to know what kind of goes on in his meetings, because that feels very and I'm not sure if I have a right to know that or not, but that's so separate from our lives, and it feels like he's doing this kind of work, but I have no clue what it is he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And this may seem very odd, but he has to, part of his requirements to keep his medical license is he has to get drug tested.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to know when he's drug tested. I just want him to tell me, you know, I was called in today, I was called just to have some, because there's some pretension, it feels it goes on, like nothing ever happened. Like nothing ever gets discussed.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then the other thing that I would like, and I have asked for this on numerous occasions, is for him to check in with me, you know, on like a weekly basis to see how I'm doing around my fears of his addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, just have, it doesn't have to be heavy and, you know, all consuming. It just could be, you know, just a quick check in and I could just give him a quick answer, but just to not to pretend that nothing ever happened.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's just baseline.
Right, right. So that's just brilliant. I mean, everything that you just said is so clear and completely valid, not coming from a defensive place, not coming from an accusing place or a fearful place. There's nothing in what you just described that anybody else would be able to forego and somehow still be able to experience a degree of safety and ease, you know, even temporarily within the situation. That those needs feel, I'm reflecting back to you, absolutely baseline.
Okay.
So, you know, the question then becomes, you know, how do you deliver those needs? You know, what's the next step? How do you communicate them? Now, you may feel like a a conversation works. Some other people feel like, you know, the conversations get too loaded and you need to write them out. You know, you need to write a letter.
Mm-hmm.
Some people feel that writing a letter, you know, ends up taking the emotion out of it and makes it seem starker than it is. But you can choose. Like, even as I say that, do you find yourself more drawn towards one version or another?
You know, having probably done both in different ways at different times over the last 2 years, the writing part feels like it carries more weight, just because I feel like I can, it's there in print, you know, and it can't be kind of disregarded in the same way that he could sort of somehow forget all the things I say. Because I can even refer back to it, which is helpful. Like, oh, yeah, I did say that. Yeah, I did ask for that. That really is
right. Right. So I think that that sounds great and clear. I also think that what's really important in especially writing something is to be very clear in one's intention. So, you know, what I've heard your intention being all along is that your first best wish would be that you personally and your husband could do your own personal and interpersonal healing work in such a way that you could keep your family together and, you know, have one home for you and for your children.
Right.
And you're noticing very clearly that you don't see yourself in this current situation moving towards the fulfillment of that intention. And so you're wanting to look at the situation and seeing what's in the way of that.
Right.
And you're noticing that you don't feel safe on a very baseline level to even do your personal healing work under the current circumstances. And if you're going to be able to do that, and if you're going to be able to trust him to do his work, these are the basic things that you need. And they're non-negotiable for you because they're really about you. And so you want him to really see them, you know, in stark reality, to share them with his support team, and to search his own heart to see, are those needs that he can meet? And if he can meet them, then you're willing to resume counseling with him. You know, you're willing to further devote yourself to your personal healing work and give it some space and time. But if he's not willing and able to meet those needs, then there's no chance for anything positive, you know, out of the two of you staying together.
Right.
And, excuse me, some of those needs, of course, do have to do with him and his activities. And, you know, there's no avoiding that. But, you know, the gambling piece, which is the first one we talked about, it doesn't matter how he sees it. And it doesn't matter how his support team sees it. But you know that he's an addict. And you know that gambling is an incredibly addictive activity.
Right.
So even if he was the one out of a billion people,
right,
who could gamble in a non-addictive way,
right,
it doesn't even matter because you're not inside of him having the experience.
Okay.
You're only having the experience that he's using in a different way.
Right.
And your experience matters more in this to some degree than his, because you're trying to figure out, can I stay in this and make it work? That's the question.
Right.
It's not, you know, what's truest of truth for him, because there's just no way that you could ever, if he was the one in a billion, there's no way that you're the person to believe that, or that no one should ask you to believe that.
Right.
So you can use your own words to make that clear.
Right.
The other thing that I would say that I would add to your to your list of baseline needs is that if he can agree to these, or even have a conversation to negotiate these with you and the two of you find some, you know, meeting ground, then you also, I would imagine, would need to have a check-in, not just on how you're doing around his addiction on a weekly basis, but on how you are doing in relation to these needs on
right.
a weekly basis.
Right.
Because otherwise they'll just slip the way some of those other agreements have slipped.
Right.
And I don't know why, you know, I don't know what's gone on in terms of the finances in the past, but the second thing you mentioned, you know, right up there was financial disclosure. And, you know, so I'm saying I don't know why there wasn't complete financial disclosure, you know, previously, but it's, you know, it's absolutely warranted in this situation. And, again, what you're looking for in his response is not just, you know, will he say yes to all of these things, but are there aspects of his response that tell you already what you need to know? So, for instance, if he were at all defensive about complete financial disclosure, you know, that's almost all you need to know.
Right.
Because
right.
his actions have put the family in great financial jeopardy. So his unwillingness, if he experienced it, to be completely seen, to have the sunlight shine on the way that that's being handled, would be an indication that it's not safe.
Yeah.
There's something that he doesn't want you to see.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there was more to what you said, and all of it was you know, seemed spot on, but in terms of those two key things, it seems as clear as day to me.
Yeah. Well, I can easily get lost in all of that, you know, and how, what, you know, kind of like I think I said the last time, you know, like I live in the presence of the absence, you know. I'm mm-hmm. so clued into what isn't, and I'm actually quite tired of it.
So I think that, you know, almost every single time when I work with someone, I will put the focus on that person, tell them what they can do, support them in deepening their process. And I believe, I'm just reiterating what I said before, that what came up through our conversation today is that threw you off the horse was that you are in a state of trauma, and it doesn't make sense to do this, you know, deep healing process when that's the current reality. Not that you, I encourage you to go back to what you were doing in the 3 days and do it as best as you can, but this path that we're talking about right now is designed to create the space in which you could do that safely outside of a fight or flight mechanism being in, you know, constant operation. So if it leads to an agreement and then we're talking again and we're doing the work that we thought we were going to do today, great, because we learned exactly what was in the way and we addressed it.
Right.
But likewise, if you put those needs out there and they're not met in any satisfactory way and you do need to separate and then you're doing the work, you know, that's also a good option, you know, because you need to do your work and you're going to do it whichever way, as we said before, and we can't know which way is going to bring you to that place of baseline safety, but whichever it is, it's time to do it.
Right.
And by the way, you know, I don't want to get involved in, you know, some of those personal details and sometimes what end up becoming legal details, but you know, everything that we're talking about impacts every aspect of your life and your children's well-being as well. So it's one thing to say, I'm not moving, you're going to have to move out. But if it turned out that your husband couldn't meet these baseline needs and you felt that it was time to separate and you also felt like the best thing for you and your kids was for you to stay and for him to go, it's not a given that you have to leave.
Well, that's why, I have spoken to lawyers, and that's where, again, I start to feel trapped because I have been told, you know, I shouldn't just leave. And so then if we're both there in the middle of this kind of ugly mess, it makes it just, you know, just, I mean, that's a whole different issue, I suppose, but it just creates my feeling stuck even more, you know, like how do I ever affect change in this situation, you know?
Right, and what I'm saying is because this is a subject that I know something about, having to do with, you know, the legal process and divorce and custody and all that sort of stuff.
Sorry about
that. That you're getting the standard advice that says, you know, you shouldn't leave for all of the standard reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying is that this isn't a standard situation.
Right.
Because of everything that's gone down. And if you're in a situation where you feel that your husband's actions are putting you and your children at risk, whether it's, a physical risk, which in this case doesn't seem to be what's happening, or, you know, just a livelihood risk.
Right.
Then the situation is different than the usual kind of divorce and custody, and there's a lot that you can bring to any possible legal action that you might take that is specific to this case. And so all I'm saying is that stuck place that you might get to when you feel as if, you're getting legal advice to say don't leave, but you can't get safe if you don't leave, I'm just saying that there's more to it than that. And I think with the right people involved, the right counsel, you have the right, both just as a person and, you know, from a legal perspective, you have a right to create that baseline safety.
But, you know, I don't know if you have time to hear this little story or not, because I've
sure.
sort of been down this road a little bit. I had something that happened with my husband 6 months ago that totally threw me and it kind of catapulted me to this next place where, you know, I had took me another 6 months probably just to stop being angry again. And I saw lawyers after this particular thing happened because it was so egregious and outrageous to me. And it was, and I'll just be really brief.
Mm-hmm.
My older daughter, who's nine, she was like eight now, I guess she was just turned nine at the time, is a dancer, and she was dancing with a group of kids, and he was picking her up, and I was going to grab her after he picked her up. He was going to take her to lunch. So anyway, long story short, I saw her at the end of the day, and I asked her how it went when her dad picked her up, and she said, well, I don't understand why the police came. And I said, what are you talking about? Well, you know, I was standing alone. And she was in this little dancing outfit. I'm standing alone in front of this casino where he had to go cash in his chips. And I think you said you used to live in L.A., so the casino's in Inglewood,
mm-hmm.
the Hollywood Park Casino. Mm-hmm. And he left her standing in front of this casino for, you know, maybe 5 minutes, of how she remembered it. And so he went and ran in and, you know, for me, it was, talk about fight or flight. Every outraged, enraged mechanism in me went off. So
mm-hmm.
I just couldn't believe he could actually do that, that he could put her life in danger that way, that he could, anyway, long story. It was a long story at the time, but the end result was I went and I just didn't think I could ever continue to even speak to him civilly again. And I called an attorney and met with an attorney, and the attorney said to me, you know, Mindy, basically what will happen here is that, you know, in 6 months, you know, he'll be able probably to get full custody. This is not enough. His overdosing is not enough. There's just not enough that's going to keep him from having physical custody. And that really threw me. And I've spoken to three lawyers since then. And so, you know, I mean, maybe I'm not talking to the right lawyers, but
Let me just ask you this question, and you know, I'm really happy to hear this, and you know, we are a little bit afield, but it's still important because
yeah.
we're talking about your sense of safety. So I just want to ask this quick
mm-hmm.
follow-up question: on what basis were they giving you that information that that you know he would be the physical custodian?
Well, because they said, you know, what he's doing is he's getting drug tested. He's doing all the steps, the actual steps a person needs to take to get his life on track, and because, you know, judges want parents to have contact with their children, both parents, that
those are all different issues than him being awarded physical custody. So I don't understand that one piece of information, why they would have told you that he would be granted physical custody over you.
he wouldn't be granted physical custody over me, but he would get, you know, whether it's overnight, you know, basically what they said is over time, he will have his 50% over, you know, that I could delay it, but he's going to get his end of his, you know, his rights in for custody, that he hasn't done anything that's that egregious, even though it's outrageous, but it's not that egregious where he won't be given custody based on his what he's been doing to get his life on track. So yeah, right. He's done some stupid things, they would say. Yeah, leaving her in front of a casino alone in little dancing clothes was really stupid and put her life in danger, but it's not enough. You know, like, and this lawyer, a couple of lawyers said to me, give me some more stuff. Give me bigger stuff. And it's like,
okay,
oh, my God.
Right.
Oh,
so
my God.
And how that, you know, would lead to this sense of being trapped in the situation. And so I'll just say this, and then we can leave this piece of it for now, that let's just say that, you know, those attorneys are correct in one sense that, you know, he'll be able to get, you know, his legal rights, you know, if he continues on in a program. But that doesn't necessarily equal 50%, and that's something that, you know, over time would be worked out, you know. So that's
right.
I'm just wanting to say that's not a given by any stretch of the imagination, number one. And then number two, I would just add that, you know, and we're not talking legally right now, you know, and I'm not a lawyer, and I would never give any advice in this regard, but I think it is really significant if somebody is swapping addictions, if somebody is using it in a different way. So, you know, I have no idea, you know, how the legal system handles that, but I think that, you know, for you personally, you have to start with your own baseline and then fight for what's true based on that baseline. So,
right.
So what I, you know, I feel, let me just lay out what I would consider to be, you know, next steps for you and also for us in this process. You know, the next step would be that sometime within the next, you know, few days or as soon as you can possibly get to it, that you would write out those baseline needs and that you would make your intention clear from a
yeah.
positive perspective why you're doing that. And making it clear that these would be the baseline needs that will allow you to continue to try to make things work with him and to do your own healing work as well.
Yeah.
And to put that out there, you know, and to see what happens and to do it, as I say, in the most neutral way possible without, you know, and whether it's me you use to check it or someone else who, you know, you use who you trust to check it, just to go through the language to make sure that anything that is possibly inflammatory, you know, is removed or changed in such a way that it's just matter of fact that
okay.
there isn't blame or accusation. You present that, you ask him to read it and to search his heart about it and to get back to you as soon as he feels like he knows what his truth is about that. And you can also say to him that, you know, I would appreciate it if you would get back to me within X amount of time. You can decide what that is. And if for whatever reason you need more time than that, please let me know, but also let me know why, like what's happening as opposed to a stall, you know, like what's really, what is it that's you know, making it take longer for you to give me your honest answer.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to, you know, get into these details and negotiate some of them with me, then just tell me that. It's not like, you know, you have to agree to all these things or forget it. We have to have a dialogue about these things at the very least. So, you know, if you're ready for that, but not just to say, you know, check, 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 then let's figure out the circumstances in which we can have this dialogue. You know, do we need another person there? Can we do it ourselves? But let's keep moving forward towards seeing, you know, how this list could be implemented. And, you know, during all that process, continue to stay attentive to your feelings as you were before. But this itself is going to be very empowering for you. You know,
yeah.
you mentioned that, you know, you felt that having some action steps last time and not just being completely victimized helped you feel free. This is an
yeah.
extension of that going in a different direction. So,
right.
you know, by all means pay attention, but also I'm pretty confident that there will be a positive internal response to this as well, and you know, look for that and notice that. Be with that if you can too.
Okay.
And then let me know, you know, because I would like to set up another time to connect with you. You know, we would start most likely with the external basics and then take what we know and work on the internal,
mm-hmm.
so that we keep both processes going. That's the path that seems good to me. Does that seem good to you?
That would be great. That would be great.
Okay. So, well, let's leave it here. Excuse me, I'm going to turn off the recording function. And before doing that, I just want to thank you again for your, you know, your real great, great courage and willingness in this process.
Well, I appreciate you making it possible. I feel really, you know, trusting of you. So I thank you so much.
Okay, you're more than welcome. You've been listening to Emotional Connection with Raphael Kushner. Our theme music is by Stephen Walters. For more information on this work, please visit my website, livingthequestions.org. This is also where you can reach me to ask questions and provide feedback, schedule your own private session by phone, get listings of upcoming events in your area, and learn about our unique year-long program. Once again, that's livingthequestions.org. Thank you for joining us, and here's to emotional connection.